Today marks our last chapter in this pursuit series. And in this final chapter, Paul kind of picks up the pace and begins to speak with this tone of urgency and finality. And Paul wants our pursuit of Jesus to be deliberate. And that's what we have been after so far in this pursuit series, that we can take a look through this telescope and take a look at the cross and to focus on Jesus. But our pursuit of Jesus, it has to be planned through, has to be planned for. Paul wants us to carefully consider how we are going to pursue a relationship with Jesus. And we have the potential for this. We have the potential to be thoughtful, to be more deliberate. And there's even hope for some of us guys. And one of the complaints from the ladies about the guys is that we often lack thoughtfulness and consideration towards you, right? Most definitely. And for some of us, for some of us who are married, I want us to do this really quick. I want you to think back to your engagement story. Think back to it. Most of us have them, or at least we know of an engagement story, if you don't have one yet. Here's mine. Happened around Christmas time, and one of my presents, Christmas presents for Tisa, was tickets to the Straz to see a show called Wonderland. And so during Thanksgiving break, I went to Terry and Brenda and just talked to them about my desire to marry their daughter. And of course, they said yes. Thankfully, it was very intimidating. But my plan was to take Tisa to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. That's one of my favorite steakhouses in town. And then to propose to her during our dinner there. So hopefully it was romantic. And then we'd go to the Straz and we'd enjoy this great night together, get some brownie points, excited to start this new life. When we arrived at Ruth's Chris, I saw a person from my past who was totally against Tisa and I being together. And I was at a loss. Like, I had planned this out. I had prepared for this. His appearance at the restaurant at the same exact time that I was planning on proposing to this woman, it stressed me out. I had a plan. It wasn't working out. So I get on the phone. I call Ruth's Chris. I speak to their hostess and just explain the situation to them. Just as briefly as I can, just said, hey, can you just take care of me? Like, put me on the other side of the restaurant so there's no way that we can cross. During dinner, I had to reconsider how I was going to ask Tisa to marry me. So we ate dinner, we went to the Straz, we watched the show, and after the show, we walked alongside the river. You guys have ever been to the Straz and, you know, that kind of river walk? And as we're walking back, there's a bench. So I asked Tisa, why don't you sit down? And she makes this comment to me almost immediately. She goes, I wish this night wasn't over yet. I'm like, this is it. This is where I can kick in. And so, you know what? I say, you know what? This night isn't over yet. And I got down on my knees and expressed my love towards her. And as scandalous or as dangerous as this proposal would be, I knew that God wanted us to come together in covenant marriage. And I told her, you know what, the night's not over because your parents are waiting at home right now. Like, they know what's going on, and they're ready for us to come over and to celebrate. So here's my question. I know you have a similar experience as men. We've had that type of intentionality, that type of thoughtfulness in this one instance. But the question is, why stop there? Why do we stop with the thoughtfulness, the consideration, the intentionality with the proposal? What would our lives look like? What would our pursuit of Jesus look like? What would our marriages look like if we carry that same thoughtfulness and that consideration as much as we can every single day towards God and spouse? And that brings us to our proposition this morning. The proposition is that a thoughtful pursuit of Jesus results in God's presence. The proposition lays out the motivation for us to become more thoughtful in our pursuit of Jesus. God promises to us that as we are thoughtful, as we are considerate, that He will be with us. So if you can't feel God's presence right now, you've been going through a cycle of life and you can't see God, you can't feel God, there's no connection going on, I would consider asking yourself this question. How thoughtful am I right now on a daily basis with Jesus? Because let's be honest, many of us, especially us men, we may have forgotten what it means to be intentional in a relationship, to be thoughtful in a relationship towards God and towards a spouse. So Paul writes us to show us how we can become more thoughtful in our pursuit of Jesus. So let's get to the text. So we're in chapter 4, and this morning we're going to read verses 1 through 9. And let's read it together. Here's what it says. Therefore, my beloved brethren, whom I long to see, my joy and crown, in this way stand firm in the Lord, my beloved. I urge Euodia, and I urge Syntyche to live in harmony in the Lord. Indeed, true companion, I ask you also to help these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel, together with Clement, also in the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence, and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. The things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. So here's the promise. You just read it. If you practice, God's presence will be with you. So Paul lays out some ways for us to become more thoughtful in our pursuit of Jesus. So let's get to our first point this morning. The first point is that we are to help others to stand firm in their pursuit of Jesus. Church family, what we are trying over this past year to create and to build, church family is God's environment that He designed for us to help others. Just as you have a particular set of circumstances that challenges you in your pursuit of Jesus, so does that person right next to you. They have their own set of circumstances they struggle with. And the Philippian church was the same. In verse 1, Paul tells the church what he describes as his joy, his crown. He tells them to stand firm. And that verbal phrase in Greek is an imperative. He is commanding them to do it. You must stand firm. So if we're going to continue pursuing Jesus and to not give up, we must learn how to stand firm and persevere. And verse 2 gives us the context of what standing firm was looking like in the Philippian church. Let's take a look at verse 2 together. In verse 2, Paul says he urges Euodia and Syntyche to live in harmony in the Lord. Something has happened between these two church members. We don't know what happened. Paul doesn't describe the situation, but we know that they aren't living in harmony with the Lord and with one another. There is some dispute that is going on between these two church folks. For some of us, it would be extremely difficult to get involved in those types of situations. Many of us, we are non-confrontational. When there's discord going on, we just want to stay away. And some of us, we're passive about it. We'll let somebody else deal with the situation. But then Paul writes verse 3. Let's take a look at it. He says, true companion, I ask you also to help these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel. When Paul says true companion, he means that the Philippian church and Paul are on the same team. The church and the pastor share the same yoke. They share the same task. This isn't just a job for Paul or whoever's currently serving as the pastor for the church. This is a job for the whole church. And this is a reminder for us. When situations occur within the church, it isn't just the pastor's job to figure it out. Paul implores the whole church to get involved. Paul asked the church to help Euodia and Syntyche in their struggle with one another. So here's what we learn. Both women love the Lord. They're both believers. They're Christians. They shared Paul's struggles. Their hearts were in 100% agreement in what Paul was trying to do for the Lord. But they had an issue with each other. There's some interpersonal issue going on. And the church family has a role to play when members are in conflict. Our job is to seek to help both parties to stand firm in the Lord and to reconcile. So we have to offer ways for them to reconcile, to live in harmony, to set their minds on what their differences are in the situation, to throw that away and to focus on what do we have in common. So here's what we learned for heritage. We will experience conflict at some point as we seek to create an authentic, a real, transparent church family. Luckily, it hasn't happened yet, and I'm so thankful. But the day may come when this happens. Throughout my tenure here as your pastor, I know that I am going to make mistakes. I'm going to say something, and I'm going to do something that I'm going to eat crow about. I know it. And the same goes for you. Our church family must be so devoted to God and to each other that when these things happen, that we express this environment, you are free to make mistakes. You're going to say things wrong. You're going to do things wrong. It is okay. We're still human. Our spirit is willing, but our flesh is weak. We must seek ways to live in harmony with one another. And we do this by finding out what do we still have in common. I know that we have a difference in this area, but where can we still intersect? And what we have in common is a pursuit of Jesus. As a true companion of heritage, we should seek ways to help others to stand firm in their walk with Jesus. There will be a day when disharmony and when the enemy strikes its ugly head at heritage. There's going to be a day. But when it does, we must not be thought less and inconsiderate about our role within it. We have to be deliberate about seeking peace. Then Paul shifts his focus in the next verses to be more intentional in our lives with the things that we struggle with internally. So he addresses an external struggle, and now he addresses some internal things. And that brings us to our second point. Our second point is that we are to unload the concerns of our hearts to God. Now, the concerns of our hearts, it can quickly become burdens. And I love that song that we just sang with William a moment ago about casting our cares. It's a perfect song for this morning. This is an area of life where we often lack thoughtfulness. We often lack intentionality. We just try to survive these burdens, just to get through it, to outlast it, carry them on our own without any thought, any consideration of God's role in those concerns, God's role in those burdens. In verse 4, Paul tells us of God's desired end for us. This is amazing. Let's look at verse 4 together. Paul says, "Rejoice in the Lord always." Again, I will say, rejoice. God wants you to rejoice in him. God's desired end for you. You want to know what's my goal in life? What is God after with me in this life? It's to find satisfaction and to find joy in him. And one of the major battles in this Christian life will be for us to fight for joy when it seems like joy is gone. The enemy will attempt to use the concerns of our hearts and to transform them into burdens that we have to carry on our own. And it will rob us of our satisfaction in Jesus. And in verse 5, we see that life is too short to allow this to happen, to allow the enemy to distract us and to choke out our joy in Jesus because of our concerns. Let's look at verse 5. Paul says, "Let your gentle spirit be known to all men." Why? Because the Lord is near. Now, the early church, they lived with an expectation, an anticipation that Jesus was coming back soon. And that's the motivation for their urgency. But you know what, for us, it has been almost 2,000 years since Jesus died, resurrected, and ascended to heaven. And maybe for us, maybe we lack intentionality in our pursuit of Jesus because we just don't believe that he's coming back. Because if he was, if you knew that he was coming back tomorrow, how would you live with these final hours of your life? I tell you, I wouldn't be taking a nap this afternoon, which is what I usually do on Sunday afternoons. So maybe we lack the intentionality because we just don't believe that his return is near. But God desires for you to live with that urgency every day. It's a motivation for us to unload those concerns to God. Let's look at verse 6. Many of you have memorized this, I know. This has been a memory verse for you through the years. Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God with the thanksgiving towards him. The command is clear for us. Be anxious for nothing. Got me this morning. This verse cannot be accomplished on our own. The Greek word for anxious, it literally means to be divided. That you are, not you, you are divided into two. Or that you are distracted. Oh, that's me. What Paul is saying is this. Don't let anything distract you or to divide your attention away from Jesus. Why? Because he is coming back soon. Remember, Paul is a pastor. He knows that the church has concerns. So he tells them what they should do when these concerns come up. He tells them to pray. And he tells us how our prayers should look. Our prayers should be supplications. What this means is that when we have a concern in our hearts, we don't just pray about it today and then boom, that's done. A supplication is something that you do over and over and over again. And I know some of your concerns. There are things that you've been praying for months. There are things that you've been praying for years. And if Paul was here right now, he would say, keep praying. Keep praying. Let the supplication happen. This prayer should also be done with thanksgiving. Our prayers to God about our concerns should be layered with gratitude. And you may be thinking, you know what? I've been praying about this issue for years. God hasn't answered. What do I have to be thankful for? Two things I thought of. We have a God who truly wants to hear our concerns. How many times you go to class or you hang out with some friends and they say, what's up, man? What's going on? And you just respond, nothing, man. Everything's good. But you know deep down underneath, there's something going on. But you know they're just doing that as a greeting. They don't really want to know what's going on. Jesus is not like this. He truly cares about the concerns of your hearts. This isn't mere formality for him. And we also know from this, and what we have to be thankful for, is that he wants us to come to him. He's like a father who's inviting you to come and sit in his lap and just to unload everything that's going on to him. We have a God who responds to our concerns. One of my favorite verses in Matthew, Matthew 11:28 says this. It says, come to me, all who are weary and all who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. This is God's invitation to you this morning. Jesus says, come to me. If you're weary, if you're heavy, come to me. I want to give you rest. I want to give you peace. That's his promise. And Paul reinforces it in verse 7. In verse 7, Paul says, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, what does it do? It will guard your heart and it will guard your mind in Christ Jesus. When you give God the concerns of your heart, God promises to give you peace. So here's what we learn about the peace of God. First thing we learn about the peace of God is that it surpasses all comprehension. The Greek word that's used here for comprehension refers to the intellect, the mind, to your thinking. God's peace is not logical. It will not make sense to you or the people around you that you're going through something and you are at rest about it. There is something currently going on in my life, and for the first time in a while, I am totally at peace about this adversity. It's not affecting me the way that it does. And I don't think it's any coincidence that it also comes in time as I prepared for this sermon for you this morning. That's the promise. God's peace will guard your heart, and it will guard your mind. So God's peace is not logical. God's peace will not make rational or logical sense to you, but you'll be at peace anyway. And then we see that peace guards. And the Greek word that's used here for guard refers to a watcher. It refers to a sentinel who is meant to sit out in the middle of the night and to look out for problems. This is peace personified for you. Peace is a sentinel. Peace is a watcher sent from God himself to guard you, to guard your mind, to guard your heart. God promises to give us peace. And peace is that sentinel for those who give their concerns to him. And this sentinel will guard over your heart and your mind. So when something happens in my life, I have some concern, it immediately impacts my mind. This is how I work, church. I mean, this is, and my wife will be like, welcome to my world. When a situation happens, it doesn't really affect my heart, it affects my brain. I think of, okay, what's going on? Let me try to anticipate every single type of response that I could do, how those people will respond to it, and how I'm going to counter that. Like, my brain goes in overdrive. It is taxing, mentally exhausting for me. It takes a toll on me. It's difficult to shut off my brain. There'll be sometimes I'll just lay in bed, and that's the last thing that I think about before I go to sleep. For others, you may not be like me, but it takes a toll on your heart. Your heart just starts beating faster. You feel that heaviness that's going on in your chest. It just takes an emotional toll on you, and it kills you emotionally. This is what peace does. Peace protects your mind, and it protects your heart in both situations. And here's an illustration to help us unload the concerns of our heart to God. So I have this duffel bag this morning. We all have baggage that we carry in our Christian lives. The baggage doesn't just go away when you embrace the gospel. So you know what? I'm carrying this baggage. I come and I meet Jesus, and then he just takes the baggage away, and there's no more concerns. If that's what you learn about Christianity, I can't wait. Next year, we're going to look at 1 Peter together as a church and talk about the suffering Christian. That's not the Christian life. But this baggage represents all the concerns of our hearts. Your baggage looks completely different than my baggage. What is inside here is different than what may be inside for you. But here's my concerns. I have concerns about my marriage. I think and I pray about Tisa every single day that she would grow into all that God wants for her, that she would be joyful, that she would be satisfied in the Lord, and that I would be a husband that would joyfully sacrifice for her every single day, that we would create a marriage that would make people hungry for Jesus every day. That is a concern that is in my baggage that I carry every day. Got some more concerns in here. I'm sure you do too. I have a concern for my family. I love Aubrey so much. I see these memories and these smiles, and I want her to grow up and to know the Lord, to know that he is treasure, that all the stuff that glitters in the world, it's nothing, that Jesus is everything. I want to grow to be the dad that God wants for her and her unique needs. I so want that for her. And every single day, I struggle to find what's that perfect balance, because we have our own baggage that we bring into the relationship. There's more, church. I got more baggage. You may not be able to see this too well, but many of you know I'm a bivocational pastor. I work for the school district. I mentor a couple dozen young teachers fresh out of college, and I'm concerned from every single day that their job is to invest in students. It's not about math. It's not about biology. It's about taking this kid, this 14-year-old, and having an impact on them. And to be there for them when they want to quit. To realize, don't give up. You're on to something with them. And I'm concerned with, like, am I doing a good job at that? And then there's Heritage. I love this old picture of Branchton Baptist Church. Every single day I carry these concerns for the church. I wonder, is Heritage going to make it? Planting a church is such a trend today. Replanting a church, it doesn't happen. People will close the doors, sell the property, go start something new instead of renovating and revitalizing a church. So I wonder, is this church going to return to health? Is this church going to return to growth? Are Heritage Christians going to get it? They exist to pursue God, cultivate relationships with people, to have this burden for the lost, to lovingly serve anyone they come into contact with. And then ultimately, my wife reminded me of this just the other day. Like, you forgot one other concern of your heart. That's a checkbook. Then in the midst of all of these concerns, from marriage and family to jobs, is God going to provide? When I wrote the offering check this morning, is God really going to provide? These are the concerns of my heart. So here's the thing. You have your own stuff. What's your concerns? And here is our options. I've laid it all out for you. These are my concerns, and I can make the decision to put them all back into my bag, put it on my shoulders, and keep trucking through. And you can make the same decision, church. That's a possibility for us. But there's another option. We can take these concerns. I can take my concern for my marriage, my family, and I can leave it at the cross. And here's my job. Here's the church, and it's at the cross. I can take money, just leave it at the cross. But here's the thing. I've left it at the cross, but the objects of my concerns are still there. The objects of my concerns never go away, but the ownership of those struggles are transferred to the cross. And that's what we are after. That's how we become more thoughtful. So church, you can make this decision to carry this load on your own. But I implore you, whatever is in your bag this morning, take it to the cross. Take it to the cross. If I carry my baggage on my own, it's going to negatively impact me as I build relationships with you as a church family, at my job, in my own family. It's going to impact as I develop those relationships. So I've laid them at the cross. What about you? But here's the thing. His promise is to give me rest. He promises to give me peace as I do this. So I take out these concerns. But here's the thing. It's not like tomorrow I'm going to go back to the cross and pick these back up and to put them back in my bag and to carry them again on my own. I can't go back to the cross and pick up my burdens. I'm still going to see Tisa. I'm still going to see Aubrey. I'm still going to see teachers at work and my church family. But I will no longer be encumbered. I will no longer be weighed down. I'll be free to be able to build relationships the way that God has intended. So the question is, are you thoughtful about those burdens? Are you thoughtful about those concerns or not? Or are you thoughtless and you just carry them on your own and you're just hoping with enough self-resolve, or maybe just avoid it and just don't unzip it and look in, that it's just gonna go away? The call this morning is to dig into your baggage, see what's there, and to leave it at the cross. All right, let's get to our final point. The final point this morning is that we have to live out what we're learning from the scriptures. Giving God your concerns, it allows you to redirect your mind and your heart's focus back on to Jesus. He's got the burdens now, so you can pursue him. And verse 8 tells us the things that we're to fill our minds with and our hearts with instead of those concerns that were weighing us down. And verse 8 tells us what those are. He says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, there's any excellence, anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. We have a whole list of things to replace the things that we stuffed into our hearts and minds. True, honorable, right, pure, lovely, good repute, worthy of praise, excellence. We become deliberate in our pursuit of Jesus when we refuse to be consumed by those concerns and to focus our best onto Jesus. Paul's encouragement for us is to dwell. That's what he says, dwell on these things. And the Greek word for dwell, the Greek root for this word for dwell, is where we get the English word logic. It's once again about thinking. What you put into your brain. Instead of filling your mind with all these anxious thoughts and all of these burdens about your concerns, find what is true. Find what is right. Find what is honorable. This takes thoughtfulness. This takes intention. And this is going to be a recurring struggle in our lives because these people, they don't go away, but your heart and your mind are changed in how you approach them. And Paul sums it up in this way in verse 9. He says that the things that you have learned, received, heard, and seen in me, what? He says to practice these things. And then what will happen? That the God of peace will be with you. Paul tells us to live out what we're learning. Now, the Philippian church, man, this is great. You guys are stuck with me. But the Philippian church had Paul himself. He planned the church. He was the pastor. He was the man. He taught them the gospel. He served them. He planned the church with them. And they loved on him. They learned about the scriptures from Paul. They watched him as he lived out the scriptures. They watched him suffer. Nothing can replace. This is what we learn. Nothing can replace the relationship between a pastor and a flock. That's what we learn right here. A church family is meant to learn from a pastor, to watch a pastor, to watch him in his pursuit of Jesus. And they're meant to practice all that a pastor pours into them. That's what I'm so excited about, that we are building family. This isn't a program. We're building a family. Where for, I don't know, a year, 5, 10, 20, 30 years, it's pouring and pouring and pouring. And to see what God's going to do in all of this. Can you imagine us together in 5 years and what it's going to be like? What type of person you're going to be? What type of person I'm going to be as a result of this church family? I can't wait to get there. The Greek word for practice means to do something repeatedly. You don't just do something once and then you give up and it's done and it's over. You do it over and over and over again. God desires for you to repeatedly do all that you are learning from the scriptures. What this means for us practically is that in a moment, you're going to have an opportunity to identify the concerns of your heart and to give them to Jesus. That doesn't mean you don't do it tomorrow. Remember, these things don't just go away from me. It's a daily thing. Repeatedly practice these things. This is a call to a lifelong pursuit of Jesus. And we have a promise for this when we do. The God of peace will be with us. This means that we will experience God's peace for any situation. Becoming thoughtful in our pursuit of Jesus results in peace. We'll be content no matter the situation, no matter the adversity that comes our way. So the question is, are you thoughtfully and intentionally developing a pursuit of Jesus? In this church family, we're going to have discord one day. It's going to happen. But have you thought about what your role is going to be in that, to help others to stand firm, to find those commonalities? Question, are you still holding on to that baggage? Or are you unloading it to God? Where are you this morning? If you become thoughtful and deliberate in your pursuit of Jesus, God offers you peace to guard you in any situation.